hell is this?" she raged, pulling at the slashed fabric and waving it in my face. My mouth dropped open. I was dumbfounded. Surely I was not looking at a dress that had been ripped to shreds. "Let me see that," Teresa said, taking the dress from Victoria's grasp. I held the hanger as she spread it out between us, her fingers trailing down the jagged rips in the satin. "I say, someone's taken a knife to it," Victoria's mother piped up, like Miss Marple in the background. But as I peered closer, I could see that the implement that had been used was more likely scissors. Someone had speedily cut through as many layers as they could. I looked down as sprinklings of diamante dropped to the floor. "This can't be right," I said, my words fading as my sister and I exchanged horrified glances.
"My dress! My beautiful dress!"
Victoria emitted a low howl of despair, and plump tears streaked down her face. I could not blame her for her outburst. It was a week until her wedding, and the dress that she had so painstakingly chosen was now reduced to a tattered mess. However, it was just as horrific for me, given how much money I had invested in buying it. I felt sick and shocked that I had not noticed the damage sooner. "It must be a different gown," I said, grasping for answers. "The seamstress must have sent me back the wrong one. This can't be yours. It can't. There's got to be a mistake." My words tumbled out, and I continued speaking quickly until I stopped making sense. I fought for air, feeling the world close in on me as everything in my life went wrong. Victoria's face reddened until it was almost puce. Her fists clenched. She grabbed me by my shirt, giving me a violent shake. She pressed her face against mine. "What the fuck have you done to my dress?" she snarled. I closed my eyes to the spittle landing on my face, my teeth rattling as this larger-than-life woman took hold. Throwing the gown to the floor, Teresa came between us, releasing Victoria's grasp. I left her to deal with the mess, and with my arms swinging by my sides, strode into the back room with as much dignity as I could muster. Slamming the door behind me, I slid to the floor, giving in to the tears that had built up in uncontrollable waves. It had happened again. My tormentor had returned to haunt me, breaking down each segment of my life until I had nothing left to give. Teresa's voice carried from the other room, saying that she did not know who could have done this. But I did. And he wasn't going to stop there. Chapter 49, Emma, 2017. I don't know how long I was sitting on the floor before Teresa came to find me. Curled up in a ball, I had wrapped my arms around my knees, feeling like a child once more. Tentatively, she approached me, her face clouded in concern. "Sweetheart, are you okay?" She gently touched my shoulder, helping me to rise to my feet. Pins and needles spiked my legs, and I leaned on the kitchen counter for support. I felt dazed, as if I had been in a car crash and lost all sense of time. But the only car crash here was my life. My tongue felt glued to the roof of my mouth, and I swallowed, my words croaky as I spoke.
I don't feel very well.
I clung tighter to the counter as the memory returned.
"The dress,"
I said, recalling Victoria's angry face, her thick fingers digging into my shirt.
"Is she..."
I stared at her, open-mouthed.
"Is she gone?"
"Here, let me get you a drink," Teresa said, pushing a glass beneath the tap and guiding me to sit at the table. "When's the last time you've eaten? How about a sandwich, eh? You need some food inside you." I sipped the lukewarm water, closing my eyes as it slipped down my throat. A wave of dizziness overcame me, and the glass trembled as I set it back on the table. I rubbed my eyes with the butts of my palms, trying to clear my field of vision. Victoria, I said. I take it she's gone.
It's okay, I've sorted it. Silly cow threatened to sue, but her second choice still fits her, and she's a bit happier now she's hiring it for free. A rustling noise ensued as Teresa poked her head in the fridge. Here, she said, taking a tuna sandwich from its wrapper and laying it before me. Eat. I narrowed my eyes as I came to my senses.
You know who did this, don't you?
Luke, he's the one responsible.
That's not possible, Teresa said, shaking her head. We lock up every night. I've checked. There's no sign of a break-in.
She shoved the sandwich towards me. I checked the dress when it came back from the seamstress yesterday. It was perfect.
I frowned. The look on Teresa's face made me wonder.
You don't think it was me, do you?
I forced myself to take a bite of the sandwich, knowing she wouldn't respond until I ate.
No, she said, a smile rising to her lips as she watched me eat.
At least, not knowingly. You've been under a lot of pressure lately. I'm just scared that it's getting to you.
She touched my hand.
This thing with Luke, I'm on your side.
I paused mid-chew.
What's me being stressed got to do with the dress being slashed?
My eyes flitted towards the door.
And why are you here with me when there's nobody in the shop?
I've closed for lunch. Look, she said, pursing her lips.
I'm just saying, you don't have to prove anything to me.
I swallowed, feeling my strength return. I stared at my sister as I got to grips with her words.
You think I damaged the dress, then blamed it on Luke so you'd believe me?
Why would I do that? You know what a big mouth Victoria has. This is going to ruin our reputation.
Teresa snorted.
Nobody pays attention to her. Besides, I sorted it.
I rolled my eyes.
Don't try to placate me. It's awful what's happened. If it was me getting married and my dress was in shreds, I'd go mad.
No, honestly, I sorted it. I told her I have CCTV of her assaulting you. She's lucky I didn't call the police. I think that's enough to make it go away.
But we haven't got CCTV, I said, for once wishing that we had. That camera in the corner is fake.
Teresa gave me a wry smile.
I know that, and you know that, but she doesn't know that, and that's the way it's going to stay. Trust me, we can sweep all this under the carpet. Thank God the backup dress fitted her. Bridezilla will have her perfect day after all.
Even though I sabotaged the dress to begin with. You don't really believe that, do you?
Teresa nodded towards the sandwich, and I took another bite. This was the way it had always been, trading off information for food. She had encouraged me to eat in whatever way she could.
She shook her head.
Of course not. It was a silly thing to say. But what is worrying me is your inability to cope with it. You've had far worse things than this come your way. You should have fought back, pushed the silly woman away.
She toyed with her silver necklace, a sure sign she was uncomfortable with what she was about to say.
I just think that you should consider getting counselling.
Alex, he spoke to me this morning.
He knows you're not eating. He's worried about you. We both are.
I opened my mouth to speak, but Teresa raised her hand.
We weren't going behind your back. Please, don't tell him I told you. I'm just trying to help the pair of you.
I took a sip of water, dismissing the judgmental voices swirling around my head. There was no point in airing my suspicions about Luke. It was safer to tell her what she wanted to hear.
Maybe he's right, I said. Sometimes I feel like the whole world is against me.
Teresa gave me a gentle smile.
Don't be daft, it'll all be okay.
Now, how about I make us both a nice cup of tea? I've got some chocolate biscuits hidden in the cupboard.
Food was the last thing I needed, but I found myself nodding just the same.
Chapter 50 Alex 2017 I stared at the envelope. bile rising in my throat. The feeling of helplessness washed over me. It was the same alien emotion I'd encountered when the doctors had told me my chances of fathering a child were slim to none. Just like my infertility, this situation was out of my control. I had given my work address to the company who carried out the DNA results, as there was no way I could risk Emma finding out what I had done. Having excused myself from the office, I stood outside in the dying sunlight, turning the envelope over in my fingers. The car park was reasonably quiet, and although this was not how I had pictured finding out, I could not wait until I went home. I thought of Jamie's birth, the fierce pride that had burned in my chest at the sight of my son. Now I was reduced to this, holding on to a secret too awful to share. It was I who told Emma to sleep while I took over the night feeds. I who had comforted Jamie during teething when his red swollen gums caused him pain. I who taught him how to feed himself, raised out my hands beside Emma as he took his first step. Dada was the first word he had spoken. I tightened my jaw, determined to remain in control. If it came to it, I thought I would be able to get over the fact that I was not blood-related. But Emma's deception would cut a much deeper groove into my soul. I turned the envelope over as I tried to gather enough courage to read the results inside. Wouldn't it be easier to tear the damn thing up and forget that it ever came? We could move to Leeds, start again and carry on believing that Jamie was mine. Did I need to know if Emma had lied to me about her relationship with Luke? It was all in the past, wasn't it? I leaned against the cold concrete wall, wondering if that was the case. How could it be in the past as long as Luke was living in York? Regardless of what he'd said, I could be placing Emma in danger. That's if she was telling the truth. I wanted to believe her, but every day evidence was mounting against her, leaving me in fear of what she might do next. After all that had happened, was she capable of looking after our son? Our son. My grip on the envelope tightened as the wind threatened to whisk it away. Fumbling with the flap, I finally ripped it open, my body rigid as I shook the letter free. I closed my eyes, taking what could be my last breath as Jamie's father, praying for a satisfactory conclusion. But my prayers went unanswered as I glared at the cold and impersonal string of words. The alleged father is excluded as the biological father of the tested child. The alleged father lacks the genetic markers that must be contributed to the child by the biological father. The probability of paternity is 0%.
No!
I moaned, feeling like someone had ripped out my heart and crushed it in front of me.
It can't be!
In the distance, the car door slammed, and I quickly shoved the letter back into the envelope before pushing it deep into my jacket pocket. All these years Emma had lied to me. My own wife. I felt a wave of nausea as reality hit hard. I closed my eyes, seeing the text on the back of my eyelids. The probability of paternity is 0%. What a muck I had been. No wonder she was scared of Luke coming back. He was not the monster she portrayed. He was the father of her son. I had spoken to him myself. As for Teresa, of course she had told me the truth. She was Emma's sister. And now, if I was in any doubt, the DNA result spoke for itself. The question was, what did I do next? Where did that leave me and Jamie? Would Emma turn on me just as she had with Luke? I may be listed as the father on his birth certificate, but if it went to court, what legal rights did I actually have? Then again, would Emma really cause trouble when it emerged that I knew what she had done? Ugly thoughts raised their heads as I tried to assemble a plan. Dipping my hand into my pocket, I pulled out my vaporizer, closing my eyes as I inhaled. The artificial tang of tobacco and aniseed hit my throat, and I exhaled a cloud of white smoke. There were no clues, No evidence of Emma's attempt to murder Luke on our land. I was not afraid to play dirty. I would do whatever it took to protect my son. I swallowed, the unpleasant taste of my betrayal making itself known. I could not believe I was thinking of Emma in this way. Her face flashed in my memory. I loved my wife. What had happened to always standing by her? She had problems. I'd known that from the day we met. But nothing like this. What good was a marriage without trust? How could she love me if all she did was lie? Opposing thoughts bounced around in my head as I paced the path, trying to work out my options. I had to get back inside. People would be wondering where I was. But how on earth could I carry on as if nothing had happened? Unless... I could say I'd received a phone call and there was a family emergency at home. If I did not speak to somebody soon, I would combust. I couldn't tell my mother. The disappointment that she wasn't blood-related to her only grandson would be too much for her to bear. My phone buzzed in my pocket, and I realized I had missed a call. As I checked my call log, the answer appeared before me. Teresa had helped me once already. God knows people I could confide in were thin on the ground. I rubbed my chin as I mulled it over. Could I relay the full extent of Emma's lies? I felt like I had to. I needed help. I could not do this on my own.
Chapter 51, Emma, 2003. Life had taken on a slate-grey hue in the months since Luke and I had split. What was the point? It was the end of the line. There was nothing more I could do. I slid my phone from my pocket, the late spring sun casting a reflection on the screen. Sitting on my picnic blanket in the grounds of Colchester Castle, I was reminded of everything I had lost, how I had driven Luke away. Because he was right. It was my fault. He had been cruel just to push the point home. I looked through my texts one last time before I deleted them. Emma. I miss you. XXX. Emma. I'm sorry. Can we meet? XXX. Emma. Please, Luke. I still miss you. Please text me. XXX. Emma. I don't want to live without you. XXX. Emma. If you don't speak to me soon, I'm ending it. You'll never see me again. Emma. Don't you care about me at all? Luke.
If you don't stop harassing me, then I'm calling the police.
Emma. What about our night in the beach hut? You said you loved me. Luke.
I'm sorry, but it's all in your head.
Emma. What? Why are you denying it? I meant what I said. I won't tell a soul. Emma. Luke?
Luke. It's been 6 months. Leave me alone. Final warning.
Emma. Fine. I'll leave you for good. See how you like having my death on your conscience. I pressed the delete button, my heart sinking like a stone. My constant calls, the presents I had sent, nothing seemed to warrant a response. This was the final test. I had to get home quickly to carry out my plans. Dad was at some award ceremony by the Archaeological Society. He had not thought to ask if I wanted to go, but these days it was an effort for him just to get dressed and leave the house. What would he say when he came home to a pile of ash? Because when I left this world, I was going out with a bang. I might have seemed quiet and introverted, but my demise would light the skyline today. I bit my bottom lip, ready to send one more text, feeling every bit as pathetic as Luke said I was. I just couldn't leave it alone, and I prayed that this last gesture would bring him back to me. Emma. I'll be at home, alone, At 2 p.m, the house will go up in flames, with me inside it. I waited for a response, but none came. By 2:30 p.m, I was sitting in my bedroom, the smell of white spirit stinging my eyes. Luke was right. How many times would I let life kick me in the teeth before finally lying down? Mum, Teresa, Dad, Luke, they had all deserted me. My life had become one painful episode of loving people and watching them leave. My wounds were raw, my energy depleted. I wasn't strong enough to face life on my own. My shoulders shook as I sobbed, and I blinked away the tears to focus on the box of matches in my hand. The match fizzled into life as I struck it against the coarse surface of the box. Emitting one last, desperate sob, I threw it onto the saturated floor.
Chapter 52, Emma, 2017. As I strolled around the aisles of the supermarket, I thought how lucky I was to have my sister in my life. I knew that guilt still plagued her from not being there when I'd needed her the most, and it had been hard growing into a young woman with just Dad to guide me. Teresa did her best, popping back to see me when she could, but she was uneasy at home. She and Dad were not exactly close, and she always seemed to be counting the minutes until she could leave. She had more than made up for it since then, though, and Jamie's birth had been the balm that had healed many wounds. My eyes scanned the cake section as I searched for a sponge of the right consistency. Only food could silence my inner voice, the one that plagued me from morning to night. It was growing louder now. The incident with the slashed dress had frightened me. I had tried to distract myself by filling my thoughts with my family, my business, even my choice of clothes. But now, as things began to fall apart, the voice of my subconscious became so loud and fierce, I wondered if other people could hear it too. Teresa had insisted I finish early, leaving reporting the vandalization to her. But I knew she wasn't going to call the police. She thought I had done it. I could see it in her eyes. Our seamstress would be able to replace the torn material, salvage the ripped dress. But my relationships with my loved ones were not so easily mended. I could have kicked myself for spying on Alex and Teresa that morning, especially since she had told me their meeting was born out of concern. But not enough was being done about the threat towards me. A cold feeling of déjà vu rose up inside me as I struggled to be believed. Surely the people closest to me must know that I was telling the truth. But Alex seemed more concerned about whether or not I was eating, asking me to mirror him at the table and provide a good example for our son, though he could not watch me all the time. When I was young, the dinner table was a battleground, my bad habits a small act of defiance. And now I was rebelling again, except the only person I was hurting was myself. I threw 3 tubs of ice cream into my trolley, kidding myself that they were for Jamie. I liked the different textures and sensations of sweet and sour, so I threw in a 12-pack of salt and vinegar crisps as well. Sometimes they felt like jagged glass as I swallowed, barely chewing, while my eyes roamed the table for more. The only semblance of self-control I held was against binging on alcohol. I had grown up around Mum's drinking binges whenever Dad was away. I wouldn't allow it, not when I was looking after Jamie. Blaming my mother was easier than taking responsibility myself. I held traces of her in my mind, her pretty scarves and long flowing dresses which hung beautifully on her thin frame. When I thought of my childhood, memories of her were scattered everywhere. Yet I struggled to reach the good ones that were buried deep inside. Mum attending the school play, coaxing the teachers into giving me the lead role, her eyes shining with tears as she sat beside Dad, watching me sing on stage. That had happened, hadn't it?
I hadn't just made it up. I scanned my items at the self-service checkout, vowing that this relapse would be a fleeting one, something to take the pressure off while I got my life back on an even keel. I hummed as I scanned, anything to quieten the voice that would resurface later on. Puberty happened to my body long before my mind caught up with it. I loved flicking through my mother's magazines. I would stare at the images of emaciated models and ultra-thin pop stars worshipped by my peers. Each page, each image, reinforced the answer that had been staring me in the face all along. I was not popular because I was not like them. Diets were futile, leaving me with a growing sense of failure, making me despise myself even more. I just could not stick to them, preferring starchy foods and calorie-laden crisps and chocolate to fresh vegetables and fruit. That's when I read an article about a celebrity who was a self-confessed bulimic. It stated that she kept her stick-like figure by throwing up after every meal. It felt like a revelation. I stared at the article in wonder, a smile touching my lips. I could eat whatever I wanted and would never put on a pound. Looking back, I can see how naive I was. Shoving my fingers down my throat did not come naturally, but as I closed my eyes, I would imagine my favorite celebs doing the same thing. They must have found it difficult at first, I told myself while I purged. I learned how to mask the smells and always kept the bathroom spotlessly clean for when I gripped the porcelain bowl. I liked the feeling of emptiness, and it soon turned into an obsession. My reward was seeing the weight drop off my face and hearing the approving voice of my mother in my mind. At the beginning, it was euphoric, watching my body change. For the first time in my life, I had sculpted cheekbones, a smooth stomach, and I felt free. But my hair had lost its shine, and the knuckles of my right hand were raw from grazing my throat. My menstrual cycle was erratic. I was cold and tired all the time, and I could not keep up with the demands I placed upon myself. I was a failure, yet again, and found comfort in food. I began to have cravings, telling myself that I deserved it, that I could rid myself of the calorific value later and flush it all away. If only it were as easy to flush away the emotional turmoil that went with it. The guilt was soon forgotten when I was tucking into the forbidden food. Like an animal preparing for hibernation, I would pull out my secret stash. After the initial euphoria, all I was left with was loathing and self-hatred. The cycle would start all over again. It was a mental battle I could not win. A shopping bag on each arm, I left the supermarket, thoughts of my husband filling my mind. His kind face, his soft smile. Talking to Alex had gone a long way to aiding my recovery. When we first met, he did not allow a day to pass without telling me how valued I was. He guided me into getting proper counseling, driving me there and picking me up. Slowly, I began to recover, and the strength of my self-destructive voices began to weaken. But now, they were back, along with a man hell-bent on revenge. Something told me I was in for the fight of my life.
Chapter 53. Alex. 2017. It was a 20-minute walk from my office in Colchester High Street to Emma's shop on the outskirts of town. I'd spent the whole time looking out for her, despite her texting to say she had gone shopping and would be taking the bus home in her own time. I had swiftly replied, texting that I would pick up Jamie on the way home. I didn't tell her that I was finishing early for fear that she might ask for a lift. I could not bear to talk to her. Not yet. As the bell jangled over my head, Teresa met me at the shop door, turning the sign to closed. "I got your text. Sorry about the short reply. I've been busy." "Emma said you had a problem." I took in the tight, worried expression on her face. Everything all right? I could ask you the same thing, she said, kicking off her heels. I'm a 5-hour car journey from all right, I said solemnly, following her as she padded through to the staff room. I emitted a heavy sigh. I don't know where to start. The envelope containing the DNA results felt like it was going to burn a hole in my pocket. I knew I should be talking to Emma, but I was afraid of what I might say. My sadness had turned to anger, and right now it felt like our confrontation could end up with me packing a bag and taking Jamie with me. I took a seat at the table in the kitchen room. Sorry to bother you again so soon. I didn't know who else to talk to. Standing on her toes, Teresa stretched above me to reach two glasses in the cupboard overhead. The smell of her perfume kissed my senses, a sweet and summery scent. I loosened my tie and opened the top button of my shirt. The room was sweltering, so different from our chilly bungalow. You're welcome here any time, Teresa said, pulling down a bottle of whiskey from the shelf. She silenced my protests with a wave of her hand. I know you're driving, but one won't do any harm. After topping up my whiskey with water from the tap, she handed it to me. I can't, I said wearily. But you go ahead. Ignoring my protests, she pushed the glass into my hand before taking a seat beside me. Just one. You look like you need it. Best we don't stay too long, eh? Emma's not been herself today. We had an accident with the dress, and I found her talking to herself, virtually a puddle on the ground. I raised an eyebrow, trying to muster up some sympathy as Teresa recalled what had happened that day. Nothing surprised me anymore. Who do you think slashed it? I asked. Teresa sighed, taking comfort in the contents of her glass. Given that she lived in a flat above the shop, she did not need to worry about driving home. The thing is, she said, her lips narrowing. The only person here this morning was Emma. Josh wasn't working today. The scissors went missing this morning. She jerked her thumb back at the drawer behind her. They're kept in there. After Emma had left, I did a quick search of the shop, and I found them in her desk drawer on the shop floor. Silence fell as I absorbed her words. You think whoever slashed the dress used the shop scissors to do it? Teresa nodded. They hacked the material like they were in a hurry. I found some white satin fibers stuck between the scissor blades. We only really used them for removing tags. And what were they doing in her desk? You'll have to ask her that, not me, I grunted, knocking back a mouthful of whiskey. I was still numb from reading the DNA results. Cutting up wedding dresses were the least of my worries. Listen to me blabbering on. You said you needed to talk. What's happened? My chin wobbled as I tried to speak, and I was horrified to feel tears rising behind my eyes. I wished I could play the hard man, but the thought of my son not being mine produced pain like I'd never experienced. Soon I'd be picking him up, and I would be forced to confront the truth. My left hand dropped to my pocket, and I pulled the envelope out. I felt a warm, comforting hand as Teresa rubbed my back. Hey, what's wrong? Read it for yourself, I said, relieved to be able to share my burden. I rubbed my eyes until I was satisfied they were dry. God, I hadn't realized just how stressful it's been, keeping this all inside. Teresa's eyes darted from left to right, her lips silently moving as she scanned the page. Jesus, Teresa murmured. You had a DNA test. I take it Emma doesn't know. I shook my head. And that's the way it has to stay, at least until I figure out what to do. Luke is the father. He has to be. Are you sure? I remember she was looking into sperm donors around that time. How do you know it's not someone else? There's a lot more to it than that. I straightened in my chair as I regained my composure. But you've got to promise me. You can't let this go any further. She cupped my hand and gave it a squeeze. It won't. I'm here for both of you, and this is my sister we're talking about. I only want what's best for her. Sliding my vaporizer from my pocket, I began to suck on the plastic tip. Emma hated me using it in the shop, but I was desperate for a cigarette. Teresa rose from the table and walked to a dial on the wall. I knew she was hiding her shock, trying to stay strong to support me. I was grateful to hear a little click as she turned the heat down. She returned, bringing a pack of cigarettes with her. Here, she said, throwing me a lighter. Just don't dub me in. But the dresses, I said, despite taking a cigarette from the pack. Sod it. Nothing a bit of air freshener won't cover up. I closed my eyes as I inhaled, enjoying the kick that only a real cigarette could bring. If Emma could see us both now, flicking cigarette ash into a saucer on the table, she'd be horrified. I glanced at my watch, conscious of the time, and, pulling myself together, explained how Emma had tried to send Luke into an early grave.
I don't believe it, Teresa said, aghast. Not Emma. She would have said something. She would have told me.
She compartmentalized the whole incident, put it all behind her. I exhaled, feeling empty like I had nothing left to give. I only found out because I insisted on selling the house. She was adamant that he was dead, but when she went back to dig the grave, there was nothing there. I rubbed my chin. He can't have just disappeared into thin air, unless...
Unless it never happened,
Teresa said, her face solemn.
Maybe she's made it up to take the blame for everything that's going on.
But you're forgetting, I said, taking another drag of my cigarette. Jamie's been fathered by another man. I struggled to find the words. This is going to sound crazy, I said. But I met Luke in Leeds. He tracked me down somehow and asked me to meet up. He lives there now and he wanted me to tell Emma to stay away.
What?
She said, slamming her tumbler onto the table after emptying its contents. Unscrewing the lid from the whiskey bottle, she refilled her glass.
How is that possible?
I shrugged. None of this makes any sense. I haven't told Emma yet. I need to know what I'm dealing with. The last thing I want is her having a full-on relapse. I clasped and unclasped my hands. There was no escaping it. Despite everything she had done, I still loved my wife. What a fool I was. I ran through my meeting with Luke and our conversation in the bar. The confused expression on Teresa's face would have been comical had the subject matter not been so devastating.
We've got to find out if the man you spoke to is actually the real Luke Priestwood,
Teresa said, stubbing out her cigarette.
He's got an older brother. I remember him from school. I think he's got a sister too.
She clenched her hands, a frown crossing her face.
All this stuff that's been happening, I thought it was Emma. But maybe they're setting her up to make it look that way.
But why now? I asked.
Why not? Think about it. Maybe Emma was telling the truth and she did kill Luke. What if they found the body? Or are trying to draw her out because he's still missing and they're worried she's responsible for his death?
It's possible, I suppose. Luke's brother could be posing as him, using his identity. He had a scar on the back of his head. Said it was from when Emma hit him with the shovel. I felt a pang of guilt. I'd been quick to point the finger in Emma's direction. At least Teresa was trying to vindicate her sister. I checked my watch for a second time. I'm sorry to put this burden on you and leave, but I've got to pick up Jamie from nursery.
She's my sister. I'd be more upset if you didn't tell me,
Teresa said.
Leave it with me. I'll put some feelers out for Luke, see what I can find out about him. But there's something we need to do first.
What's that? I said, rising from the table and emptying the cigarette butts into the bin. I stood at the sink and rinsed the saucer. Teresa would clean up the rest, make it look like we had never met.
We need to dig up the land.
She nodded in agreement with herself, her face set in determination.
Yes, that's what we'll do. Hire a digger and go deep. Because if there is a body buried in there and you sell the house, my sister's going to jail.
Chapter 54. Alex. 2017. I drove across the Strood to home, my thoughts battling against each other as I worked out where my loyalties lay. I glanced in my rearview mirror. There was only one answer to that question, and he was asleep in the back seat. Clinging to his teddy, Jamie was dressed like Paddington Bear in his blue dungarees and red Wellington boots. All he needed was a brown luggage label. Please look after this boy. Thank you. My heart warmed at the sight of his cherubic face. He had truly been a precious bundle, a gift from God. I came to a decision. None of this was his fault. Regardless of the DNA results, he was my child, and he could rely on me. I would never let him down. I returned my focus to the road, which was still wet from the afternoon tide. A flock of seagulls flew in the periphery, catching the glint of the sun on their backs. The nearer I came to home, the stronger the sense of timelessness became. Had I expected things to be different, just because my world had blown apart? I drove past the long green hedgerows, the tractors and cyclists, the people who had remained the same. My inner world had collapsed, yet life went on as usual. I wondered what had driven Emma's father to settle in East Mersey, when the west side of the island was filled with community life. I had been delayed as I picked up Jamie because the nursery worker had chatted to me as he gathered up his things. It meant I would not be able to come home early and check on Emma as I had planned. I knew why she had insisted on going shopping on her own. She needed time to stash the food she would gorge on when I was asleep. I had supported her when she attended counseling and celebrated the time she was well. But stress was a part of life, and a relapse was always just around the corner. I had searched for support and information online so many times, but the administrators of online help groups were painfully guarded, open only to the sufferers themselves. Where was my support? All I wanted to do was to understand. People focused on the victims, but what about their other halves? I was not immune to her pain. I learned to turn a blind eye to the packages of food hidden at the back of our wardrobe, the clues that signaled a relapse. I knew that she was not taking a shower when she disappeared to the bathroom after a meal. I knew that it was hurting her inside. Teresa had been a lifeline when it came to helping me understand, explaining the twisted narrative that had brought Emma her own private hell. My stomach contracted miserably as I parked the car on our drive. What I would give to wave a magic wand and put an end to all our problems. We loved each other, I knew that. But would a move to Leeds be enough to drive our demons away? Carrying in my precious sleeping bundle, I was met with the smell of cleaning fluid drifting from the bathroom. I gently placed Jamie on the sofa, unplugging him from his Wellington boots and covering him with the woolen throw. I found Emma at our kitchen table, having cleaned away the evidence of her binge and now barely able to lift her gaze. Her hair had come loose from its clip, and mascara was smeared down her face. She looked gaunt and disheveled, far from the immaculate image she usually presented to the world. I frowned. She had cleaned up the kitchen but forgotten about herself. My eyes darted to the cooker to find she had not made anything for dinner. It wasn't that I minded, but any deviation from her routine sparked new worries. She was getting worse. I needed to fix this as soon as I could. Jamie's asleep in the living room. I was still hurting from the results of the DNA test and spoke in clipped tones.
Is that the time?
She said, gazing at the clock on the wall, and I wondered just how long she'd been sitting there. You sort Jamie out. I'll make a spag bol. Have you eaten? I said, glancing in her direction.
I got something in town, she replied.
I shrugged a response. Fine, suit yourself. I knew that I should comfort her, talk to her about her day, but my feet seemed glued to the floor, a part of me hanging on to the male pride which was telling me to walk away. My phone dinged with a text, and I slid it from my pocket. It was Teresa.
Hired a mini digger, being delivered this evening. Keep Emma off the land until we sort this out. X.T.
I stared at the phone, relief sweeping over me as the woman I trusted took control. I failed to see how there could be a body in our land, but at least I knew that I was not in this alone.
Chapter 55, Emma, 2017. I sat on the lid of the toilet seat, absorbing the happy sounds filtering through our family bathroom. I had bribed Jamie into having his nightly bath by allowing him to use the color-changing bubble bath Teresa had bought him last week. Clapping his hands together, he squealed with delight as orange and pink bubbles exploded between his fingers.
Look, Mummy, he said, taking a handful and blowing them in my direction. Oh, you naughty little boy, I teased, exaggerating my movements as I pretended to shield myself from the invasion of bubbles. Skimming a handful from the bath, I plopped them onto his hair and watched as he gave himself a Mohican. But my thoughts tugged at my consciousness, and I picked up my phone to check my notifications, feeling a tingle of excitement as I realized I had received a response. I had not expected a reply this soon. Teresa was the whiz on social media, whereas I barely looked at my Facebook account these days. My profile picture depicted a sunset, and my middle name was displayed instead of my first. On this occasion, I was grateful for the anonymity, given who I was making contact with. I shoved my phone into my pocket and grabbed the towel that was warming on the rail. Right, little man, time to get you into your onesie. Daddy's cooking your favorite tonight, spaghetti bolognese. Scooping him out of the bath, I remembered the expression on Alex's face when he came home. I had been lost in thought, weak from my exertions. The incident with the slashed dress had shaken me, and the disbelieving look on Teresa's face had mirrored Alex's as he stood at the kitchen door. Last night, I had heard scratching at the window, but I had been too scared to get up and look. I had not forgotten Luke's threats to break me apart. It wasn't just my house that felt like it was being invaded. My relationships with the people closest to me were too. I brought Jamie close to me as he zipped up his X-Men onesie, and he squeaked in protest as I hugged him tightly. Mummy, you're hurting me, he said,
and I blinked back the tears blurring my vision. Sorry, Poppet. Mummy just loves you so much, that's all.
I love you too. You're the best mummy in the world.
Planting a kiss on my cheek, he grabbed his teddy before running out to the hall to monitor his father's culinary efforts. I checked my watch. It was almost time for me to go. The meeting had been set up at short notice, but I would not back out now. I checked my face in the mirror, now scrubbed clean with a light application of tinted moisturizer. I should have dressed up, but I couldn't. I wasn't that person anymore. Jeans and a thick woolen sweatshirt would have to do. I quickly replied to the Facebook message, saying that I'd be there soon. After one last glance in the mirror, I pulled on my puffer jacket in the hall, popping my head into the kitchen to tell Alex I was going out. He seemed surprised by my departure, and when he asked when I was coming back, I shrugged and said I wouldn't be long. My excuse of an evening appointment with a client was met with some suspicion, and as he looked me up and down, I told him that the bride seemed more comfortable with casual dress. Telling him I was catching the bus, I bade him and Jamie goodbye, satisfied that I was doing something to get myself out of this awful situation. After what happened in the car park, I still could not bring myself to drive. I knew my attention would not be on the roads today. I bounced in my seat as the bus chugged across the Strood. Twilight had taken hold, casting the landscape in dull and colourless uniform grey. The tide had withdrawn, and an array of yachts bobbed against the lull of the water that gently lapped at their sides. I gripped my handbag tightly, trying to muster up courage for what lay ahead. For so many years, thoughts of Luke had terrified me, the mention of his name enough to send me into a tailspin. But time was running out. The executioner's axe was swinging over me. If Luke didn't hurt me, then I would end up hurting myself, swallowed by acts of self-destruction. Now, more than ever, I needed to be brave. Chapter 56, Emma, 2017. I wondered if it was a crime, pretending to be someone I was not. It wasn't as if I could afford to get into trouble with the police. It was nothing short of a stroke of luck that I had found Noelle online. Either she hadn't gotten married, or she had kept her maiden name. Luckily, there weren't that many Priestwoods around Colchester. Once I'd found her advertisement online, I was able to get in touch on Facebook. She had lost some weight since our school days, but I recognized her straight away. I had no idea how she would react to me, given our brief encounter in our youth. After being dumped by Luke, I had tried to talk to her in town, but she had turned on me, screaming to leave her alone. I just hoped that today's contact would provide a more favourable reaction. All I had to do was befriend a mutual friend and say I was interested in signing up to her network marketing business. My nerves jittered as I walked into Wetherspoons, wondering if she would recognize my face. I had changed so much from the girl I used to be. Meeting Alex had turned my life around. It felt like a rebirth, going to university and living a normal life. It was only when I shared a house with other students that I realized my disruptive upbringing was far from the norm. She had asked to meet in the Playhouse pub in Colchester. My profile picture had left her with little clue to my identity, but when I entered the bar, I recognized her straight away. She had kind eyes behind her designer glasses, and I could see a tiny bit of Luke in her. She was slimmer, but not as tall as her brother, and her hair was a couple of shades lighter, brunette with a touch of sun-kissed blonde. The lines around her eyes suggested someone who was optimistic by nature. With her black dress and red court shoes, she made me feel underdressed. She extended her hand, gripping mine in a strong, pumping action. I remembered my close encounter with my angry bride, imagining what Noelle would do with those fists if she were angry enough to take her frustrations out on me. But still, I felt a pang of sympathy for her. I knew what it was like to live without a family member, to feel the ghost of their presence, unable to move on. As we sat, I looked from left to right, checking we had a quiet space. "You don't remember me, do you?" I asked, mirroring her smile. "I have to say your face rings a bell, but not your name. You're local, aren't you?" Noelle said, tilting her head to one side. "Mersey Island," I said quietly. "I knew your brother Luke from school." I waited for an outburst, or at the very least some mumblings of disbelief. Instead, she took out her business folder, spreading a set of leaflets on the table in front of us. "Oh, there's lots of interested clients in Mersey Island. You should make a killing out there. There's lots of people keen to supplement their income selling aloe vera, especially when it works so well." She spoke in full business patter mode, barely stopping for breath. She had either not heard my comment about her brother, or she was deliberately choosing to ignore it. Being a businesswoman myself, I could see that her focus was on getting me to subscribe to her network marketing team. By the end of her presentation, her fingers were positively twitching as they held the pen for the sign-up form. "Have you heard from Luke lately?" I said, my gaze falling to the paperwork on the table. "Why do you ask?" she said, her smile fading. I glanced at her, trying to mask the guilt I felt inside. "Oh, no reason. I heard he went off the radar, and I was just wondering if you'd been in touch." It felt like the air was being sucked out of the room as she scrutinized my face. Like a worm baking under the sun, I squirmed under the heat of her gaze. Has Luke sent you? Because if he has, I don't want to know. She snapped the paperwork from the table, giving me nothing to look at as I tried to divert my eyes. Her chest was heaving now, as if she was short of breath. I told you I'm an old friend. Why? Is there a problem with that? I straightened in my chair. I had been assaulted once already. I did not want to make a habit of it. But Noelle wasn't having any of it, and tucked away her paperwork before getting in my face. You're not interested in these products at all, are you? Mum told me to be careful meeting strangers online. She shook her head. Has Luke sent you? Run out of money, has he? Is that it? But each word seemed difficult for her to express as her breath became strained. She fumbled in her bag, the color draining from her face as she searched for something inside. I was grateful for the precious seconds that gave me time to work out what to say. I had not expected this response at all. Luke's family had supported him when he'd taken out the injunction against me in school. Noelle was chalk white with fear. What had happened since then to turn things around? With obvious relief, she pulled a blue-tipped asthma inhaler from her bag. It was similar to the ones my dad used to use before his emphysema was diagnosed. Giving me a weary glance, she attached it to her mouth and delivered two short puffs of air. I'm sorry, I said. I didn't mean to waste your time. Luke didn't send me, but I do need to know where he is. Does he live in Colchester? Have you heard from him since he disappeared? My words fired out at an alarming rate. I told myself to slow down, but I couldn't help it as my anxiety took hold. Was he alive or not? I wanted to shake her until she told me what I needed to know. She gathered up her things, almost toppling over her chair in her haste to get away. Grabbing her bag from the floor, she pulled a set of car keys from her pocket. I rose too, ready to follow her out. But Noelle had other ideas. She spun on her heel to face me. Why are you following me? I don't know where he is, and if I did, I wouldn't tell you. The best thing you can do is steer well clear of him. I followed her as she made her way out, under the steady eye of the barman. Her feet pounding the pavement, she beat a retreat towards her parked car. Anger flared inside me as I trotted beside her in an effort to keep up. It's a shame you didn't think that way when he was taking an injunction out against me. Noelle came to a dead stop, a glimmer of recognition in her eyes. You're Emma Hetherington. Luke taught me in school. He did more than teach you, from what I remember, she said, her brows knitting together in a frown. I flushed. Yes, well, that's in the past. I'm married now, trying to get on with my life. Well then, why are you following me? My time up, she continued her walk to the car. Because I'm scared, I blurted. Please, I need your help. He's tearing my family apart, and I don't know what to do. Noelle stilled for a second time. She leaned against her car, her fingers digging into her bag, gripping the inhaler for another puff. Get in, she said, nodding towards the passenger seat of her grey Ford Focus. I pushed away an empty Coke can with my foot and settled into the passenger seat. My nerves were bubbling up inside me as I wondered if this was such a good idea after all. What if Noelle drove off and brought me straight to Luke? I could be walking into a trap. I took a deep breath. I don't want to bring any trouble to your door, I said, encouraged by the sympathy in her eyes. But I need to know where Luke is. I'm scared he's come back. I filled her in on the recent events, omitting the incident 4 years earlier. I don't know where he is, Noelle said, tapping her fingers against the steering wheel. And I don't want to know. Luke's... well, he's bad news. I'm sorry we didn't believe you before. We underestimated him. When's the last time you heard from him? I said, my eyes on the footwell of her car. Noelle exhaled a lungful of breath. 3? 4 years ago? I'm sorry I shouted at you, but you put the wind up me. The last thing I need, the last thing my family needs, is to see Luke again. I gave her an imploring look, desperate for a semblance of help. Can you tell